to be patient with each other. Patience, what a virtue. Benjamin Franklin said, the lack of self-control is the most expensive luxury in life. The lack of self-control is the most expensive luxury in life. The most needed grace in the married life is patience. It's easy to fly off the handle, but being patient pays more dividends. A couple's on the verge of divorce. It seemed they could never get along. Some friends saw them a long time afterwards and found they were very happy. And out of curiosity, said, well, what's the secret of your happiness? And the man smiled and said, two bears did it. He said, two bears? He said, yeah, bear you one another's burdens and forbearing one another in love. Forbearing means, you know, being patient. Bearing, long-suffering. Forbearing one another in love. Number eight, trust each other. Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. A lot of ways to be suspicious. You may think that he's making more money than he lets you know he's making. Because you haven't seen his paycheck in so long. You get to thinking, I wonder if that old buzzard's making three times what he is making. I mean, he hadn't told me about a raise he's gotten in at least 5 years. Sure he got a raise in the last 5 years. What's he doing with that other money? Suspicion. Suspicion. Heard of an old family way back in the country, never seen a mirror, a looking glass. And the old man walked off the farm and down the highway one day and found an old piece of a broken mirror, and he picked up and looked at it. He didn't know what it was. He said, well, what about this? It's a picture of my old grandfather. So he took it back and hung it in the barn. He'd go out there every day and just stare in that mirror. It's a picture of my old grandfather. His wife watched him going out to the barn all the time. She wondered what he was doing out there. So one day when he was gone, she went out there and looked in that mirror. She had never seen the mirror either. And she looked in and she said, so you're the old hag my old man has been running around with. Don't be suspicious of each other. Trust each other. Number nine, be pals. The other day I come home to the airport. The last time my wife picked me up at the airport, we were riding along and she was reading an article out loud. In fact, it was a part of the article. I picked up the magazine off the airline, Republic Airlines magazine. I wasn't stealing it. It says complimentary copy. I want you to know I didn't steal the magazine. I stole others, but not that one. And I said, she said, what's this for? I said, well, it's got some things that I want to read. She said, what is it? I said, an article on how to be happily married. So she turned and began to read it, and she read where this man said that he and his wife were friends. And she just closed the book and said, you know, that's what I want us to be, as friends. And that's where it ought to be. Your husband ought to be your best pal. His best pal should not be old Jim down the street. His best pal should not be some fellow down at work that he likes to go and play golf with or go hunting with or likes to go to his house and watch football. The best pal should be you. And he should be your best pal. So be pals, and that means you must share each other's interests. Most ladies are not interested in sports. Most of them are not. Maybe I'm in an unusual group here. How many really enjoy a football game on television? What? How many like Mumble Pig? How many like baseball raising? You enjoy? Good. That's good. I'm learning something here. I'll take a survey in this crowd. But you've got to learn to share each other's interest. If he likes football, learn something about it, you know, and sit down and watch a game with him. You say the guy watches it all the time, all the time. I mean, on New Year's weekend, I mean, it's on 24 hours a day, football, from one channel to the other. And it is, isn't it? Huh? Okay, now you got it. One fellow watched football so much, his wife said, you love football better than you do me. He said, well, that may be so, but I like you better than I do basketball. He said, to be a pal, you got to share each other's interests. Learn things that you enjoy doing together. My wife enjoys shopping. Is there any ladies who don't enjoy shopping? I mean, they don't buy. They just like to shop, look at everything. How many ladies enjoy shopping, Rachel? You really enjoy shopping? How many lied about it when you didn't raise your hand? I thought so. They just like to go and look and look. And really, I don't enjoy shopping, especially with my wife, because she looks at everything. If there's 47 pieces laid out, she pick up every piece and look at it. And I'm looking around, seeing people watching us. You know, I'm getting so embarrassed. I said, honey, get what you want. Let's get out of here. I mean, I'm getting embarrassed. She said, I'm shopping. I said, this is shopping. My wife's the kind of person, she shops early. She starts Christmas shopping in July, and that's not a joke. Now, you laugh, that's not a joke. She's already bought Christmas presents for next year, and some for 1987. And she wraps them. And I do my Christmas shopping Christmas Eve. And she keeps saying, when are you going to shop? When are you going to shop? I said, probably in August or September this year. Hers are through in July. She starts early, early. Be pals. You must share each other's interests. Write down about two or three things you know your husband enjoys. Some interest, some outside activity, something you could enjoy with him. Something you could enjoy with him. Coon hunting? How many got a husband like to go coon hunting? Anybody? I got to hear my coon hunting story for the night, for the week's over. How many got a husband like to go deer hunting? Yeah. Used to, men put powder in their gun and went out to hunt deer. Now deers put powder on their nose and go out to hunt men. But anyway. Write down three or four things that your husband enjoys that you could enjoy with him, some mutual interest. And you ought to try to do those things together at least once a week. Spend some time with your husband every week doing something you both enjoy doing. And to be powerful, you must learn to communicate. You know, I think the greatest hindrance to happy marriage is not being able to communicate with each other, not being able to express your honest feelings. I mean, this should be about everything. People live 15, 20, 30 years together and never really level with their husband about certain things. They never tell him. Assume he'll find it out someday. No, you should sit down sometime when you're alone. He's in a good mood. You can catch him in a good mood. And say, listen, there's something I should have told you the first night we were married. I haven't told you yet. Learn to communicate with him. Talk with him. Without fussing and screaming, you know. I say, catch him in a good mood. I heard of one fellow who was so grumpy, his wife had a nervous breakdown. And so she went to see the doctor, and the doctor asked her several questions. And one question was, do you ever wake up grumpy in the morning? She said, Lord, no, I let him sleep. Never wake him up. Where am I? Number 10. Here's a very important thing for you. Watch family finances. Watch family finances. Here's a survey. It was taken several years ago. It's a poll. It was taken from a cross-section of people, and they list 10 primary reasons for marital misery. They list 10 primary reasons for marital misery. I was shocked when I read them. Number one was money. Money. Number two was children. Problems of raising children. Disagreeing about how the children should be disciplined, so on. Mother taking up for the child and the father spanking and so on and so on, back and forth. Number three was drinking. One of the other parties drinking. Number four was jealousy. That other man or other woman that got too much attention from the companion. Number five was in-laws. By the way, if you have daughters-in-laws and sons-in-laws, you ought to stay out of the business. They're going to have to make some mistakes. You had to make some yourself. And you can't run their lives for them. You're going to make some mistakes. Give them advice and counsel when they seek it. But don't be trying to run their lives. Stay out of their lives. Number six, staying out too late. Number seven, trivial things of no real importance, childish things, little things that really didn't matter. And number eight was leisure time. I mentioned that a while ago. Spend some time together. Leisure time was the eighth cause of marital misery. And number nine was selfishness. Not enough give and take. Number ten was religion. I'd have put that awfully high on the top. That may be the surface of all of it, the bottom line of all of it. The number 10 was religion, different beliefs. Nobody should ever marry that doesn't marry a born-again believer. Believers should only marry believers. But watch family finances. How many remember little jingles, advertisements on radio and television, some old one they don't have now? Anybody remember any other than me? Anybody remember some? Raise your hand. Nobody remembers any. That must be strange. Remember that old commercial about Ivory soap? It's 99 and 44, 100% pure. Remember that one? Well, in Atlanta, Georgia, there was a jewelry store called K Jewelers, and everybody bought things at K's on the credit. You give them a dollar down, a dollar a week till you got it paid for. And it's an easy way to buy it. And they had a little commercial on radio. And you'd hear it several times a day on the station there in Atlanta. And it went like this. It's okay to okay till payday. Your promise to pay is okay with K. And it goes on and on, but I don't want to ruin you for listening to these girls singing. You want me to be singing a solo in a few minutes, thank you. But it's not okay to payday. Watch family finances. You must quarrel with your husband about that. Sometimes the husband's worse than the wife. Now watch out there now. Sometimes the wife's a better money manager than the husband. By the way, I used to pay all of our bills. Well, all the checks and everything. When I got so busy that I had, you know, I couldn't look after that with everything I was doing at the church and then traveling and speaking all the time. One day I took the checkbook to my wife and I said to her, you take care of this. You pay the bills, not paid on time. It'll be your fault. I'll give you the money. Here's the paycheck. I haven't seen a paycheck. This is the truth. I haven't seen a paycheck. And 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 years. Haven't seen one. Now, you think I'm lying, but I haven't seen one, really. My wife gets it, and she signs it, and she endorses it, and she puts it in the bank. And occasionally, I say, what do you do with all that money? What do you mean, all that money? I don't have enough to run the house now, she says. But she's better. Don't you tell her I said this, and you blank this off the tape. She's better than I am at watching things. I mean, she's a tight watch. Last night, what do you guess she was doing last night while I was watching TV and late news? No, cutting coupons out of a paper to get 88 cents off certain things. I said, you going to use all that stuff? She said, yeah. I said, some of that stuff we don't even need. She said, yeah, but look what a savings we're getting on it. I watched her cut out 10 or 12 coupons last night. She didn't need to do that. You know, we could have bought it without the coupons. But she's a good manager. She's better than I thought she was. She'd make a good businesswoman, I guess. Watch family finances. All right, here's one you'll love. You knew I was going to say this one. Let the husband be the head of the home. You must let him be. It won't work any other way. I thought he'd say to me, but my husband, he's not a good head. You should have thought about that before you hooked the neck on him. Too late now. He's got to be the head of the home. You cannot violate that and have a happy marriage. No way to violate it. You've got to let him be the boss. That's a hard word, but you got to let him be the boss. Now, you can give input. You make suggestions. You can cry. But the final decision has to be the husband. He has to run the home. He has to be the head of the home. Ephesians chapter 5, I need not quote the verses, verse 23. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and so on. He's the Savior of the body. As the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. In everything. When we moved to Murfreesboro, I was on the road. And my wife had to go up and when I was on the road in evangelism, preaching and meeting, she had to go and look over the houses. And she narrowed down to 3 or 4 houses. And when I came home, we went up together and she showed me the houses she had looked at, which one she liked. And she knew why she liked those houses and so on. But in the final analysis, I made the decision about which house we bought. I said, this one here, I like this house or this one. We'll get this one. And I had different reasons than she did for wanting the house. But she'd make suggestions, give input, but in the final analysis, the man must make the decisions. And if you try to run the home, you're going to mess it up. I don't care if you're smarter than he is, and you probably are. I don't care if you got a better education he's got, and you may have. I don't care if you can run it better than he can. You just can't be the boss. You can let him be the head of the house. And you got to be a submissive, loving wife with a good attitude about it, not saying, all right. I went to that sower jubilee, and they said, you're going to be the head, so bless God, you're going to be the head. Sorriest head that ever was on her body, but you'll be the head. No, you got to do it better than that. You don't even need to say that. You just need to let him be. Don't try to boss him. I tell you some things men don't like. Right from there under that. Men don't like bossy wives. You should never correct your husband in front of people and appear bossy. He starts telling a story. He says, oh, it wasn't like that at all, Curtis. And he says, even if he lies, you shouldn't correct him in front of people. If he's telling the biggest lie, you shouldn't say, just let him lie. Just let him spread it on, lie about it. Don't correct him. And when you get in the car, you can say, you lied to that woman. But don't correct him in front of people. Never. Never correct him in front of people. That's hard for you not to do. Some are saying this, some are saying this. It's hard not to do. It's hard not to try to correct people in front of others. But don't try to correct him. Let him be the head of the home. A man said, I run things around my house. The neighbor said, yes, the vacuum cleaner, the washing machine, the lawnmower. The man and his son was arguing over who was the head of the house in this community. And the old man said to his son, I tell you what you do. You hook up this team of mules, this black mule and this white mule, and said, you put some chickens in the back of the wagon in a little coop, and said, you go down the street and you stop at a home and ask who is the head of the house, and every place where you find that the man is the head of the house, that you can give him one of those mules. The white one or the brown one, either one don't make any difference. But when you find that the woman's the head of the house, you've got to give him a chicken. So he went down the road and several guys said, who's the head of this house? And there was a woman's head of this house. Woman's head of the house. Chicken, chicken, chicken. Come to one house, and the man said, I'm the head of this house. He said, are you sure? He said, I'm sure I'm the head of this house. He said to his wife, I'm the head of this house. She said, you're the head of this house. But he said, in that case, you get one of these mules. Which one do you want, the brown or the black one? No, the brown or the white one. I'll get it right in a minute. He said, I want the white one. His wife said, no, we want the brown one. He said, I want the white one. His wife said, no, we want the brown one. We don't want a white mule. Thing looks old and crappy. You don't want, get a brown one. Get the brown mule. He said, I want the white. He said, I want the brown mule. Get the brown mule. Get the brown mule. So he said, we'll take the brown mule. He said, no, you'll take a chicken. Let the husband be the head of the home. Number 12, compliment and praise each. Tell how sweet they are and how darling they are. Kids are darling. I love kids. Every little kid I pick up that's a year old or less, I smell of his head. Always. Don't know why. It's the baby oil powder they put on. It has a good smell or something. I don't know. I always smell of a kid's head. And kiss him, you know, or her, whatever the case may be. I love little kids. I talk to them. I found a little kid 4 years old. I say, are you married yet? No, I'm not married yet. You have any children? No, I don't have any children. You have any ancestors? No, don't have any ancestors. One got my goat the other day. I said, how old are you? He said, 4 years old. I said, when will you be five? He said, my next birthday. I was in Emmanuel Baptist Church over in Bristol, Tennessee, about two Sundays ago. Little kid came in on the buses. Never had been to church before. And a man was teaching Sunday school. He was teaching on the devil. The little boy looked like he was afraid. And the man stopped and said, son, you're not afraid of the devil, are you? The boy said, well, I wouldn't be afraid of a little devil like me, but I'd be afraid of a big old devil like you. Leave it to kids. Leave it to kids. Come in and praise each other. Tell your husband how handsome he is. You can lie a little bit. You know what attracted me to my wife? She's beautiful, but I wasn't really attracted by her beauty. She's a beautiful lady, but I wasn't attracted by her beauty. I was attracted by the fact that she liked me. And she sat next to me in my typing class. And she'd tell me how nice looking I was. And she'd tell me how smart she thought I was. She said, you're the smartest person I've ever met. I didn't know she was lying, but she was saying it anyway. How wise I was, you know. That's the kind of thing that attracted me to her. Not her beauty, though. She is beautiful. But it's those compliments. Learn to compliment each other. Say nice things to each other. Don't speak out loud. But answer it on that page somewhere. When's the last time you paid a good compliment to your husband? I mean sincere compliment. You're laughing, aren't you? 48 years ago, wasn't it? You're only 30 years old. Compliment him. You did it before you got married. I guarantee you before you got married. You did it. Now, didn't you? They didn't used to do that bonnet. Did you ever compliment you before you got married? I thought so. I did. Not my husband, my wife. She did. I said to my wife, you have the most beautiful hands. She did. She kept her fingernails so neat, and she wore them long. I don't know whether you like to wear them long, but she did. She still does have them real long. So better to claw you with, my dear. Beautiful hands. I said, yes, a beautiful hand. And beautiful smile, beautiful lips, beautiful woman. You know, I'd compliment her. She's a good cook. Best cook in the world. If you ever come to Murfreesboro, go by and eat with her. Best cook in the whole wide world. I know you're a good cook, but I'm sorry, you can't beat her. She tops. Last night we had black-eyed peas, cooked till the juice is real thick, big, thick pound of cornbread, kernel cream corn, candied yams, baked ham, iced tea. And I forgot all what else she had on the table. I mean, she's a good cook. She puts it on all the time. I couldn't do without that. You know, if I didn't love her, I'd say just eat her cooking. Compliment and praise each other. Now listen, I want you to promise me, I'm going to close in a few minutes. It says 9:30, I got to quit by 9:30. I want you to promise me when you leave this building that you're going to go home and compliment your husband. Now don't, that'd be easy. I mean, he's middle-aged, he may have a heart attack, so come on. Come on slow. Don't just go and, don't give him the whole dose, you'll kill the guy. But sometimes when he's ready for the shock, I mean, put your arm around him and hug him up and say, honey, I must be the luckiest girl in the world. I was just thinking today about when we were dating before we got married and what attracted me to you. And just tell him what it was. It's gone? I mean, those pretty teeth are all gone. Is that what it was? That black wavy hair is all gone. Is that what it was? That narrow waistline has become a bubble. It's that good cooking you've been doing. When you get middle-aged, funny things happen to you. I think your brain says to your stomach, let it all hang out. I may have reached middle-age. I don't know. I'm 49. Somebody said, are you middle-aged? I said, I hope so. It means I'll be 98 when I die. But middle-age is when the broad mind and narrow waist exchanges places, so I may have arrived. I got on the scales of the little fortune came out and said, one at a time, please. Middle age is when you get it all together and forget where you put it. Or it's when you have all the answers and nobody asks you the questions. But honestly, there's three sure signs of middle age, you're going to jot it down. Number one, you start forgetting things. I don't remember the other two. Oh, look up here a minute. Don't go to sleep on me. Compliment and praise each other. Go home and tell him what a nice guy he is. Say, you know, I never realized your head was so beautiful that you lost your hair. You know? You're the most beautiful bald head I've ever seen in my whole life. Why, it looks like your neck's blowing a bubble. It's beautiful. Don't you tell him that. Don't you tell him. Well, some of you will go home and tell him that, too. I know you. I see eight of you that you can't wait to get home to say that to him. You dirty rascal, you. By the way, when I go home, I think I'll tell my wife something nice, too. I did the other day. I was gone on Valentine's Day, and that precious thing put a big Valentine's card in my suitcase under my last pair of underwear. She knew exactly when the day I'd get that last pair, and that'd be the... And it was on... Would you believe it? I had it now 2 or 3 days. And what day did I find it? Valentine's Day I found it. And I thought, what a dumb idiot I am. I didn't know it was Valentine's Day. How bad I felt. So when I met at the airport, she met me at the airport, and I got off the plane. I hugged and kissed her. Right in front of everybody, God and the devil and everybody. I mean, I kissed her good. I don't mean I pecked her. I mean, I laid one on her. So smoke came out of ears. And I said, you're my favorite Valentine. And she held my hand, walked all the way down the hall, and we had the best time. Good night. Compliment and praise each other. Tell him what a good guy he is. I wish I could tell him to do you that way, but I can't. He's not here. I told a story about a man who gave his son-in-law a pocket watch. It had the little face that opened. And inside the little thing that opened, it said, say something sweet to Sally. So every time he opened his watch to see what time it was, the little statement was, say something sweet to Sally. So every time he opened his watch to what time it was, he was reminded he'd say something sweet to his wife. And they had a very happy marriage. I told that in a sermon. And somebody gave my son-in-law a pocket watch. don't know who it was. No, it wasn't me. And it has a little face that opens, and inside of it, somebody, the head engraved, say something sweet to Sherry, which is my oldest daughter, Sherry. Don't know why we named her Sherry. Sherry means intoxicated, but we didn't know any better. We didn't know any better. We was only 19 years old, something like that. And I told her she was not drunk with wine, but filled with the Spirit. She's a precious girl. Had my fifth grandchild, named him Curtis. Yeah, isn't that great? They call him Little Kurt. Little Kurt. Handsomest little guy you ever seen in your life. Beautiful. Just like his grandfather. Come and praise each other. Put under that. Minimize the fault and magnify the virtues. I have another hour to go. I hadn't finished. Minimize the fault and magnify the virtues. I was in a classroom and I had a large chalkboard and a little bitty dot on the chalkboard. And I said, "What do you see up here?" Several raised hands. I said, "What do you see?" I said, "A dot." "What do you see?" "A dot." I asked about 10 people, "What do you see?" Everyone said, "I see a dot." And I said, "I didn't ask you what you saw on the blackboard." I said, "What do you see up here?" I said, "Here I am. You didn't see me. There's an American flag and there's a Christian flag. You didn't see that. There's an organ and piano. There's a lot of beautiful chairs. There's 5 or 6 people on the platform. You didn't see them. You didn't see these microphones, this beautiful pulpit, and this communion table down here, and all these flowers. All you saw was a dot on the board." We tend to see only the dots in life. We don't see the virtues. We see the fault, and we magnify the fault instead of the virtues. So magnify the virtues and minimize the fault. Please. Please. Number 13. Give me one more. Then I'll wrap it up with one of my little sayings I like to use. Yeah. Keep up your courtship. Don't ever quit courting. If you're 98 years old, keep right on courting till you die. Keep up your courtship. I mean, you say, "I'm done married. I've been married 30 years. We don't do all that silly stuff. That's why you got a problem. Yeah. Come on. You better keep up that silly stuff. Keep up the courtship. Love is like a fire. It must be fed or it'll go out. I have a heater in my den. If we don't put wood on it, it'll go out. It'll get cold. And nothing's colder than that soul when that fire goes out in it. And nothing's colder than the love in a marriage when you neglect it 5, 10, 15, 20 years and never say sweet things to each other, never compliment each other, and never do things together, never express love to each other. Expressions of love. "I love you. I love you." But I said, "Man, I've been married to her 40 years. She knows I love her." "Yeah, but she wants to hear you say, 'I love you.'" And I want to hear my wife say, "I love you." I want her to think that I'm the most important person in the world all the time. All the time. I want to hear her say, "I love you." And a lot of times I say, "I love you," to get her to say back to me, "I love you." Because I want to hear it. I mean, I can't hear it too much. Can you? No, you can't hear it too much. So there'll be verbal expressions of love. "I love you." Don't ever let a day go by without telling him at least 3 or 4 times a day you love him. 3 or 4 times a day you love him. Say, "I love you." Then there must be physical expressions of love. Hugging, kissing, petting. I don't suggest petting full marriage, but after you get married, you can't get too much of it. Don't get quiet in here, ladies. You make me nervous. Physical expressions of love. Kisses. Hugs. And then you ought to keep up your courtship by being physically attractive. That goes for the man as well as the woman, but I'm talking to women, so I must tell you. Before you got married, you'd dress up and clean up and put on perfume. Every eyelash is right in place. I mean, you were perfect. You got married now. No, it don't matter anymore. I got him. One lady got up early one morning with a mud pack on her face and big curlers in her hair, and she slept late and the garbage truck had already gone by. She ran, grabbed the garbage can, and chased the garbage truck and caught it. Mud on her face and curlers in her hair. When she caught the truck, she said, Am I too late for the garbage?" And the man said, "No, ma'am, jump right in, jump right in." I mean, who wants to come home and hug and kiss the wife who's got on an old chenille bathrobe with egg yeller all over the front of it? Grits in the right-hand front pocket. And up in the lapel, I don't know where you need to get all those pins you stick in those coats. Looks like a pin cushion. He tries to kiss you and gets stuck to death in the process. Keep up your courtship. You know how you courted before you got married? Verbal expressions of love. I love you. You told him over and over how sweet he was, how great he was. His expressions of love, holding his hand, and a little certain squeeze in his hand. My wife and I figured out our own language. We had a honeymoon on a Greyhound bus. Can you believe that? Went to Charleston, South Carolina for a honeymoon. Stayed down in a cabin my aunt had and had to ride a Greyhound bus home. But it was just as good as a Rolls Royce. We didn't care. We was having the best time. We had our own little code worked out, and we'd tell each other little things, our own little secret code. We worked it out in our hands. And I guess if I thought we was crazy, and we were. I mean, we went really headed. And we were talking to each other. What a good time we had. Physical expressions of love. But then keep your courtship by being physically attractive. Clean up. Brush your teeth. Comb your hair. Or put your teeth in Polydent, whichever one you do. Mine's half and half. I put part of it in Polydent. My teeth are like stars. They come out at night. But anyway. Not really honest. That's important. Very important. Because some of those things attracted him to you. And suddenly you don't do those things. You quit feeding the fire and the fire starts going out. So keep doing the things you did before you got married and the fire won't go out. Four things you never lose your husband. Four things. Got this down. Quick. Hurry. I'm 7 minutes over. But who cares? Four things. Number one, keep a clean house. Did I get you with that one? Clean out. Now there's clean dirt and dirty dirt. Did you know that? Clean dirt is a toy the baby dropped 2 hours ago. Left it in the hallway playing with it. Dirty dirt is a toy he put there 6 weeks ago. It's got dust and gangrene on it. Clean dirt's a dirty diaper that he messed up 35 minutes ago. It's in a diaper pail. Dirty dirt, the diaper's been there 3 weeks. Thank God for these throwaway Pampers. We didn't have one when I came up. We used to put these diapers in this little plastic pail, and we kept pushing the lid on it, and it'd go down and jump up again. Push it down, it'd jump up again. Push it down, and finally we had to do what you do with those things. You dunk them up and down in the commode. Just keep dunking and dunking. And some required more dunking than others, if I remember well. And some I gave up on and flushed down the commode and said, God be with you till we meet again. Oh, keep a clean house. That's what I was saying. Hey, if you hadn't been keeping a clean house, making the beds every day, washing all the dishes, vacuuming the floors, after the day. But I think you ought to vacuum when it needs it. I doubt they vacuum this every day. But you ought to vacuum when it needs it. Keep the house clean. Number two, cook good meals. Cook good meals. Don't keep getting those TV dinners. I mean, after a while, he may not say nothing, but he's getting tired of that stuff. I mean, cooking something. If you can't cook, learn how. Learn how. One girl cooked a turkey for Christmas. Her husband was eating it and said, this really is good. What kind of stuffing did it have in it? She said, that didn't need stuffing. It wasn't hollow, she said. But, I throw them out. If you don't like them, discard them. Keep a clean house. Cook good meals. Number three. Give him plenty of love and affection. I said that earlier. Give him plenty of love and affection. He never gets too old for that. Keep it up. 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 You'll revive him. Number four, don't nag. If there's any man in the world that disagrees with the four things I said, you find him, bring him to me, I'll give you $1,000. If you do those four things, keep a clean house, cook good meals, give him plenty of love and affection, and don't nag, you couldn't run him off with a shotgun. You're never going to lose him. Come on. Just keep doing those four things over and over and over and over and over and over. You'll never lose him. Never lose him. Don't nag. I close this one. If you keep on doing after you get married what you did before you got married, in order to get married, you won't ever get unmarried. Did you write that down? Let me say it again. If you keep on doing after you get married what you did before you got married, in order to get married, you won't ever get unmarried. So keep doing the things you did before you got married. Keep pushing those sweet nothings in his ear. Let's stand together, please. Thank you for listening. We got a good time here tomorrow and all day tomorrow night, and then Saturday. Hope you won't miss a single thing. You're going to enjoy Mrs. Lee Robertson, Mrs. Jack Hiles, Mrs. John R. Rice, three of the greatest Christian ladies alive today. Maybe the three greatest alive today. And then the Rice sisters. You'll enjoy all of them. It's going to be a good time. I want you to bow your heads just a moment. We have a reception afterwards, and I've gone over 12 minutes. You bow your heads just a moment now. I want you to be honest. I want the organ to play very softly, very softly. How many will be honest and say to me, Dr. Hudson, as you gave those practical things about rules that regulate a happy marriage, I saw some places where I need to make some improvements and changes, and I feel that I should make them. And I promise God and I promise you that there's some things that you talked about that I'm going to go back and practice. Raise your hand real high and let me see it all over the building. Some things you talked about, I promise I'll go back and practice. Now, if you meant that when you raised your hand, I want you to stand where you are as quickly as you can. It won't take but a minute, but this is more important than our reception. I want you to step out from where you are and without shaking hands with anybody, because that'll take more time. I want you to come and kneel when I ask you in a minute somewhere here at the front, and on your knees say, Jesus, here is the thing that I was concerned about when I heard Dr. Hudson speak. This is the thing that I want to change when I go back home. This is the thing that I want to do when I get back. And I promise you here on my knees tonight that when I go back home Saturday night, I'm going to put into practice this particular thing and tell the Lord what it is you're going to change. All right, you that raise your hand, start coming. Get on your knees and tell the Lord what it is. Quickly, 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 quickly. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Quickly, quickly. If the altar fills up, you kneel in the aisles and we'll dismiss you. Quickly. Just tell the Lord what it is. You need not tell me or anybody else, but on your knees say, Lord, this is the thing that I'm going to change. I believe that'll work. And I'm going to put that into practice when I get home.